Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Okay, greetings everybody. This is my second book review. I did my first one a little over a year ago. And I really enjoyed that one, so I'm back again, and I'm looking forward to discussing two books today. I would like to, and I was actually going to do this session about 2 or 3 months ago, but I was ill, so I had to be postponed. So here I am, it's finally happened. So So I'm Venerable Metta Vihari, and last year when I did my first book review, that was when I was a novice monk, and since then I've had my higher ordination, so now I'm a bhikkhu. I'm no longer the baby at Bodhinyana. Bodhinyana's adding monks so quickly, I've got about, there are now I think six novices and one bhikkhu behind me. So how's that? Amazing. So today, what I wanted to do was something perhaps a little bit different. I thought that it's a kind of a bit of an experiment because I decided to take two books and discuss two books. And I want to explain why I did that. So, firstly, I wanted to review this book, Kindfulness by Ajahn Brahm. That was my first thought. I had always been intrigued by the title, Kindfulness. I thought, what is that about? I'd like to know more about what kindfulness is. I couldn't find that word in the dictionary, so, as I know that it's got something to do with kindness, perhaps, and my name, of course, is Metta Vihari, so I thought this is my topic. But then I had a look at, I was looking through another book. And this is Being Nobody, Going Nowhere by Aya Kama. And I found some excellent, I enjoyed the book a lot. And I found a lot of, got some feedback on the mic. We'll just see if that can be fixed. But there were some great chapters in here about metta. So that got me thinking about putting these two books together. So what I want to do is I want to read firstly what a little passage in Ajahn Brahm's book which explains what kindfulness is. So this is on page 3, right at the beginning, and of course, this Ajahn Brahm teaches through stories, so that's what it is. He starts off with a story. So he's talking about a wealthy woman who goes to her meditation class one evening, and because many of her neighbours have been robbed, so she told the guard at the gate to her mansion to be alert and mindful at all times. When she returned, she discovered that her mansion had been robbed. She scolded her guard. "I told you to be mindful of burglars. You have failed me." "But I was mindful, ma'am," replied the guard. "I saw the burglars going into your mansion, and I noted, burglar going in, burglar going in. Then I saw them coming out with all your jewelry, and I mindfully noted, jewelry going out, jewelry going out. Then I saw them going in again and taking out your safe. And I mindfully noted again, safe being stolen, safe being stolen. I was mindful, ma'am. So then he said, had the guard been kind to his employer as well as mindful, he would have called the police. When we add kindness to mindfulness, we get kindfulness. So that's kind of the introduction to this book. He's talking about combining kindness and mindfulness. But that's where this book came in, Ayakama's book, because even though this book is like not only about kindness, but it has some excellent chapters on kindness in it. And so I thought, let's look at kindness. And this book is good because it really is very, very good at explaining the meaning of all the core teachings of Buddhism. It's an excellent overview of all the important teachers of Buddhism. And so the chapters on metta will allow us to get a good foundation in understanding what kindness is, what loving kindness is, and then we'll go on and talk about kindfulness. And it'll be interesting to see how kindfulness allows us to look at the whole idea a little bit differently. Okay. So that was the idea. So, yeah, it was advertised as a comparative book review, and that's kind of true, but it's more like a selective comparative book review, because I'm only going to select some of the chapters related to metta. But I will give a brief overview of the whole book, but I'm really only going to discuss in detail the chapters on metta. Yeah. And then I'll talk about kindfulness after that. Okay. So, but I thought it would be nice to start off by telling my own story, a little story. And I think for a couple of reasons. Firstly, because I'm really focusing on Ajahn Brahm's book, and I know Ajahn Brahm teaches using stories. And I think that's one of the reasons why it brings his teaching alive. And so I wanted to do the same thing. And another reason is, which I found in Ayakama's book, was something that she said which I found very, very true. And she talks about the importance of metta as being a feeling. She talks about words are dangerous. They give illusions of permanence, but they are nothing but concepts. This is on page 27, she writes this. So in chapter 4, that chapter is called Four Friends, and she goes through the four, what do we call, Brahma Viharas. They're the four divine abodes, metta or loving kindness, compassion, altruistic joy, and equanimity. But what I'm going to focus on is the first section on loving kindness. But she said, she's talking about, you know, that loving kindness can never exist. She writes this on page 27. Loving kindness can never exist unless it flows from the heart. As long as it's just embedded in a word, it's worthless. And then she goes on to talk about, you know, that the word river is just a word until you put your hand in the water and feel the water flowing through your fingers. She says the same goes for loving kindness. The word is meaningless. Only when you feel it flowing from your own heart will you get an idea what the Buddha talked about in so many discourses. So that's a very important point. We can sit here and talk all day about this kind of topic, but it's important to remember that this is something that it's a feeling and it has to spring from the heart. So I think stories emphasize that because they make you aware that it's an experience. So let me tell you a story of kindness that I had in my own life. And this happened a long time ago when I was at high school, and I was an avid tennis player. And I used to play tennis so often, several times a week, and I thought I'd enter myself into an amateur tennis tournament, singles, in a singles competition. I'd never done this before, so I entered in, and it was on. I had to go travel to the country, to it's like a country tournament, a fair way from home. And I got there, and it was on a grass court. I'd never played on grass before, and it was singles. I hadn't played a lot of singles, and so there was. I went along and I met my opponent, and we went and played our match. And I was very, very nervous. I'd never played in competition before, and I'd never played on grass before. I had very low self-confidence, and my nervousness just got the better of me. I just couldn't play properly, and he just thrashed me. It was like very embarrassing, and I felt quite ashamed. My first try at playing tennis in a tournament, and it had been a miserable failure. And so I remember that my opponent, he was afterwards like very kind of kind to me. This is like something I remember very much. And he kind of was very gentle. He talked to me. When we walked back, we had to walk back to the table to report the score. There were people walking, standing around in a group. He walked up close to the person sitting at the desk, and he leaned over and whispered in her ear, six love, but no one could hear. And that was like, I couldn't believe it, like that's 40 years ago or something, and I haven't forgotten that. And I think these kind of things, when we experience kindness, it's something that can change our life. These little acts of kindness can definitely be life-changing, transforming experiences. And that I think that shows the power of metta. So let's now, after having told that little story, I'm going to go on and talk about the first book. So this Ayakema being nobody, going nowhere. So this book was published by Wisdom Publications, in 1987 originally. And it has about 175 pages. Now, I loved reading this book. Like I said before, it's like if you want to get an overview of all the most important teachings in Buddhism, this is an excellent book. It goes through all the important topics. Of course, meditation is a important one. So she starts with two chapters on meditation, and then she talks about calm and insight, the two different sides of meditation, like in samadhi or calm meditation, and vipassana or insight meditation. Then she talks, like I mentioned earlier, about the four divine abodes. Then she has a chapter on loving kindness meditation. That's going to be a topic I'm going to talk about more shortly. And then she's got a chapter on the five hindrances. They're the mental states that can interfere with your meditation and in your everyday life. Then she has a chapter on karma and rebirth. Then chapter 8 is a great chapter. That's she's describing and discussing the discourse on loving kindness, the Metta Sutta. Then she's got the four kinds of happiness. That's chapter 9. Chapter 10 is the five aggregates, or the khandhas. And then chapter 11 are the 10 virtues, or paramis. And finally, chapter 12, the four noble truths and the noble eightfold path. So it's all there. If you want to get an overview of Buddhism, this is a great book. And the thing is that these two books are very different. They're very different writing styles. The positive thing about Aya Kama's book is that she does a great job at explaining things. She gives really kind of detailed explanations. She's very thoughtful, and she also talks about the implication these things have on our practice. And this book, just to mention, this book is actually these are Dharma talks, which are a lot of the Dharma books are like this. They are Dharma talks that have been transcribed and edited into book form. But I think it's been edited very, very well. It reads well as a book, and it's kind of really great. It could be used for beginners, but also even for experienced Buddhists, because it has a lot of the discussion is quite advanced as well. So that's kind of an overview of the book as a whole. But now I want to focus on the chapters about metta. So the first one is chapter 4, and like I mentioned before, that's got a section on loving kindness. So I think if we want to learn about, kind of understand what metta is, so terms I've seen used are, metta is the Pali term, Sanskrit is Maitri, for those of you who are Mahayana or Sanskrit scholars, and it's often translated as loving kindness, kindness. I've also seen goodwill or loving friendliness, but I think loving kindness is the most common translation that I've seen, and it's the one that I prefer. So I will talk about loving kindness or metta or kindness all interchangeably as the same thing, just so you understand that. But she says that what is metta? Okay, we want to understand what is loving kindness. Now she says, it's a quality, in page 28 she writes, it's a quality of the heart that makes no distinction between any living being. So the highest aspiration mentioned in the loving kindness discourse, that's the Metta Sutta, is that one should love all beings just as a mother loves her only child. Those of you with children know the feeling you have for your children and can tell the difference. How do you feel about your children, and how do you feel about other people? That is the work one has to do. So she's talking about, what she's getting at here is that it's something that should be a universal expression of feeling towards all people, and not just to those that we're close to. And so that's a really important thing to understand. And then she goes on to say, the love one has for one's family can be used as a seedbed to experience the feeling of lovingness. Then one can cultivate it, make it grow, spread it further. This is on the bottom of page 29. Only then does family love have its proper significance. So I think she's saying there that, you know, that mother or father, that unconditional love that they have for their children, that is something that contains the seed of loving kindness, of metta, but it needs to be expanded beyond the people that you're close to, and needs to be like a universal feeling that you have for all people, all other people. So that's really, really great explanation. And then she says, on page 30, she goes on to talk about, she calls it love, but it's the same, I think, as metta. Love cannot be encased in a person. A person is nothing but a bag of bones with 32 parts in it, surrounded by skin. How can love be embedded in that? And then she goes on to say, love is embedded in a feeling. So that's the kind of the same point she's making there. And then on page 31, she says, love is most importantly cultivated when we confront someone who is totally unlovable. So that's a really tall order, isn't it? We all have people that we don't get along with, that we don't like, we find maybe objectionable or difficult. But she's saying that they deserve our love just like everyone else. So that's kind of the idea is of metta. She writes, the time to be loving is when all the negative feelings arise. It's the best time for it. So then she actually takes there's a sutta, a discourse called the Metta Nisamsa Sutta, and it's the 11 benefits of metta. That's, if anyone's interested, that's in the numbered discourses chapter of the 11s, number 15. And that gives 11 benefits that come from loving kindness. And I think this is interesting because, you know, loving kindness, you don't do it for your, if you're doing it for your own benefit, it's you know, it's not really the point. But on the other hand, it has to be a care and concern for the other person. That has to be the primary consideration, the primary objective. But it's important also to know that cultivating loving kindness can actually have an effect on your own practice. It can be self-transforming. It can actually change your own mind and open your own mind up. So it's really good to understand that loving kindness is not just being nice to other people, it's actually changing your own mind. It's making you more wise. It's making you see reality better. So on page 32, she starts to go through these 11 benefits of loving kindness. The first three are, interesting, they're about sleep. One goes to sleep happily, one dreams no evil dreams, and one wakes happily. And so she spends the rest of this chapter kind of going through these 11 benefits of loving kindness. Down page 32, she makes a really important point, I think, and she says that loving kindness, it's a skill. So It's not an inbred, she writes, it's not an inbred character fault or ability. It's a skill to change oneself again and again until all impurities have been cleansed. So that's really, really nice to know that we can all develop it. It's like a seed, it's a potential in our mind, and we can develop it. If we have lots of problems with anger, everyone has anger comes up from time to time. You can turn that around through your practice. And metta practice is one of the best ways to do that. Okay, and then I can see that, as usual, I'm going to run out of time. I overplanned once again, and I'm only on the first book, right? So I'm not going to get through all I wanted to get through, but I think as long as you get a feeling for it, I hope it's valuable. So I'm going to skip ahead a little bit, but that is an excellent chapter. That chapter 4, the first part of chapter 4, talking about loving kindness. I really recommend you read that. Okay. So then she goes, I mentioned a couple of times the discourse on loving kindness, the Metta Sutta. And she has chapter 8, she has a whole chapter on the Metta Sutta. And the Metta Sutta is a very beautiful discourse about loving kindness. And it's a poem, it's in a verse format. And it's possibly, I would say, it's one of the most popular discourses in the whole canon. Like at event, any kind of events or ceremonies, it's often the first one that people think of reciting. It's a very popular, very beautiful sutta about loving kindness. I don't have time to go through it in detail in this chapter, but what I will say is that I think, you know, with our practice, it's a common thing that something that we do a lot. It's a lot of we recite this loving kindness sutta very often, and it's always that danger that we start to do it without taking it to heart, and it becomes more just an action. So that's the advantage of reading about the discourse. What she does here is she goes through every line in the Metta Sutta, and she discusses it and explains it. So I think that's wonderful, because when we are chanting, reciting, or even listening to the Metta Sutta, it's great to keep in mind what it means, and not just chant it, but actually take it to heart. So I really recommend that chapter as well, chapter 8. Okay, and now the next chapter I wanted to highlight is, it's chapter 5. Okay, and this chapter is about loving kindness meditation. So I mentioned before that she had, one of her points that Ayakama had made was that loving kindness is a skill. It's something that we can all practice, cultivate, develop. And probably one of the most, the most important practices in Buddhism is loving kindness meditation, that people do to try to develop this mind of loving kindness. So, and this actually is an overlap with Ajahn Brahm's book, because Ajahn Brahm also has a chapter on loving kindness meditation. So that's more like straight metta rather than kindfulness, that he has a chapter on that. So I thought it would be really interesting to do a comparison of the two approaches to loving kindness. And then I thought, why not do a comparison not only between the two approaches in by Ajahn Brahm and Ayakkema, but also look at kind of the traditional method that is often taught. And I think this is like the traditional metta bhavana or loving kindness meditation. I think this may have come from the Visuddhi Magga, one of the very important commentaries in Buddhism. So here comes my one and only PowerPoint slide for today. So don't worry, there's no death by PowerPoint today. Only one slide, but I have used some transitions, so watch out. But they're very simple ones. So firstly, I'm going to just quickly go through the traditional method. So the idea is that what they teach is that you choose one person from several different categories, going in a particular order. And it should be a specific person, a person that you know. You start off with people who are you're close to, and then you progressively move to people that you're less close to, and then go through somebody who you're neutral, and then you end up with someone who you're hostile to or you don't like. So you start off with, but you always start off with yourself. That's really important, because not only does loving kindness have to come from yourself, you have to have loving kindness for yourself before you can give it to other people. And also you have to recognize that you have the same wish for happiness and welfare that other people have, that it's universal. And you also have the same suffering as well. And if you can recognize the suffering that you have in other people, that's part of loving kindness. So that's why you start with yourself. And then second, you start with a dear and respected person. That's the next one. So that's somebody like a teacher maybe, or a minister of religion, someone you feel you have great respect for, and you kind of really get along with them, and you kind of ask for their advice, that kind of thing. Next one is a close person. So this is a very close person. It shouldn't be like someone like your partner, because that can cause, you know, you can slip into kind of more like attachment if you think of your partner or you. The idea is to try to prevent the romantic love from interrupting what is something very different. So, but a close person could be a very, very close friend or a close family member that you're very close to, like that. Then a friend. And now you're moving toward a neutral person. So someone maybe you just see at work, but you're just familiar, but you're not close to them. So you're just neutral about them. And then you go to a hostile person. I think the idea is that's like the number six is like really, really tough one. So you don't want to go to the hostile person until you can develop loving kindness for the neutral person. Until you can do that for the neutral person, you don't want to start on the hostile person. And then I think usually it's good to end with yourself as well. So after that, when you finish your meditation, come back to yourself again and reflect on your own feelings about yourself as well, and send loving kindness to yourself. Now I'm going to talk about Ayakkema's method, and this is on page 45. It's only a short chapter. It's only a couple of pages, but it's a lovely meditation that she's given here, and you can tell that this was a transcription from a Dhamma talk, because it talks about the group that are with her and in the room in the Dhamma hall. So she says, you know, firstly, put attention on the breath and release negative mental states as a preparation. And then you go through the following people and you wish them happiness. I think in all of metta meditation, the important thing is that you're wishing them to be happy and well. And it's a wish, you're wishing them. That's a really personal thing. It's a really personal thing that you want them to be happy and well. So once again, you start with yourself. She's the same as the traditional method. Now, because she's, as I said, she's doing this within in a Dhamma hall, so then she talks about like sending metta to the person sitting next to you, and then the whole group, everyone in the Dhamma hall. And then she goes to the parents, and then she suggests any close people. So she's just saying, like, she's kind of leaving it open. You can just any close people. Your friends. So she's not really advising you to choose one specific person. She's just leaving it open. And you can talk, just think about friends in general or more than one person. Your neighbours. I guess neighbours, depending on, you know, neighbours should be your friends, but sometimes you're not too close to your neighbours, right? So it depends. And then the last one is a disliked person. So that's an interesting contrast from the traditional method. Okay, and then, oh, that's right, and at the end she brings in all people who are going through some kind of suffering worse than yourself. So that's bringing in like the compassion, the side of compassion, which is really compassion, I think, comes from loving kindness. If you don't have loving kindness, you probably can't have compassion. But it's like a special case where you're having care and concern for people who are going through suffering. Okay, and now, and then of course you end with yourself again. Okay, and then, let's have a look at how Ajahn Brahm approaches metta meditation. And as usual, Ajahn Brahm is kind of creative and original in how he approaches it. I think that's one of the beautiful things about Ajahn Brahm is he kind of brings it alive by all these different ways of humour, using stories, encouragement and that kind of thing. So on page 85, he has a chapter on, this chapter's called Opening the Door of Your Heart. And he goes through also a metta meditation. And what he starts with, what he says, okay, his idea is that you begin with what is easy to love. And here is where he is quite different from the other two. You don't start with yourself. You start with something that's cute and cuddly. So he suggests, like his example is a kitten, a little kitten, yeah? And you think of a little kitten, you know, kind of helpless and like cute and like, and you kind of think about, maybe it's hungry, he says, you visualize it maybe abandoned, hungry, afraid, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he goes on to talk, you talk about, you know, that maybe it's an abandoned kitten. So that's kind of, once again, the aspect of compassion. And so he's saying, I will protect it, I will feed it. I imagine looking deeply into its anxious eyes, trying to melt its apprehension with the metta, flowing through my own eyes, and so on. And then he says, like, you can choose anything that is anything like this. You know, you can choose your own cute like thing or thing that is really lovely and easy to like a puppy or a baby or something like that. So be creative with it. Then he goes to a loved close person. So that's that's kind of similar. And then he goes to a close acquaintance. So that's, I guess that's like more like a friend, possibly, a close acquaintance, and a group. Okay, and then a group's, once again, I'm not quite sure what he meant when he wrote that about a group, but maybe he just means in general, thinking about people in general, that like friends in general. Okay. Oh, then he's got friend, which I assume is more of a just a casual friendship, not a close friendship kind of thing. And then he brings in something, another kind of really nice feature, which is visualization. And he describes a lotus flower in your heart. And he says, you know, imagine that the lotus flower is kind of blooming, and it's kind of, its energy is expanding through your body. So he's kind of using imagery, visualization, and a kind of a tactile kind of imagery as well. You kind of feel it in your body, it's spreading through your body. And at that point, you're wishing all living beings to be happy and well. And then only at that point do you come to yourself, because I think the point that Ajahn Brahm is getting at is that maybe for some people it's not easy to love yourself. You might have low self-esteem, you may have, you know, not had an easy life, and so you start with what's easy to love, and then if you find it difficult to love yourself, you can do it at the end after you've got up some momentum with other things. And then at the end, he comes back to this lotus flower image, and he says, reflect on how you feel at the end of the session. Okay, so that is what I wanted to show you, and that's, I just thought it would be interesting and to kind of show that, because I think we can often learn by comparison like that, and see that in Buddhism there are the principles, but there's always a lot of flexibility for your own temperament and your own personality to adapt things in the way you like it. Okay, so I'm eyeing the clock, so we've got we're getting close to time, so I'm going to have to go quickly for the last part. Okay, so let's just have a quick overview of the book Kindfulness. I've already gone through one chapter, which is the chapter that's about metta. But the rest of the book is about kindfulness, which I already introduced at the beginning of the talk. And so let me just quickly summarise the other chapters in the book. So the first chapter is called, it's just called simply Kindfulness, the first chapter. And like this is, in terms of the style, the writing style, it's a very different writing style to Ayakema, and that's why I think they really complement each other. She really explains the Dhamma and explains the concepts really, really well. And then Ajahn Brahm is great at bringing it alive and making it fun and interesting, telling stories, using humour, and encouraging you. Yeah, you feel like when you read Ajahn Brahm book, you feel very encouraged, like it's not so hard, you can do it. He says, as long as you follow the steps, you can make progress, and you can really, really, really make progress in your practice. So the first chapter of kindfulness, and I think the concept of kindfulness, which he has coined, is that it allows you to understand that it's mindfulness and kindness. And that kind of brings it back to you, it really emphasises the fact that it has to be about you. So mindfulness, generally we think it's like we're mindful of what we're doing. It's like about self-awareness, and I think that's one real, advantage of this term, because he's emphasizing that kindness is not just kindness, an act of kindness that you do for somebody, but it's also something you do for yourself. And so that I think that bringing in, combining those two terms, kindness and mindfulness, shows that the importance of having kindness for yourself. So for example, there's a story, a little story, and I'll just quickly tell that story because I think that explains what I mean. On page 5, he talks about a time when he had food poisoning a few years ago. And so he was very sick. He had agonizing cramps of food poisoning, feeling miserable, very, very unwell. And then he said, I took the opportunity to tap into the power of kindfulness. So he says, I resisted the natural tendency to escape from the pain, and I felt the sensation as fully as I could. So that's the mindfulness part. Then he said, I added kindness. I opened the door of my heart to the pain, respecting it with emotional warmth. Then I noticed that my intestines had relaxed a little because of the kindness, and the pain was slightly less. So I continued with the kindfulness. Little by little, the pain decreased as the kindfulness did its job of relaxing the digestive tract. After only 20 minutes, the pain had gone totally. I was as healthy and relaxed as if the food poisoning had never occurred. So he's saying that it says here, like, my suffering was countered by full-on kindfulness. The pain had gone completely. This is one personal example of the power of kindfulness. So I think that's, once again, that's one of the great messages of this book, is that kindness is about, kindness, if you put kindfulness together with mindfulness, it all starts with yourself. You have to have awareness for yourself, kindness for yourself, and then you can radiate that out to other people and be kind to other people. So the next chapter So the next chapter is called Kindful Attention, and that is that chapter is about breath meditation. So that's more a guide to breath meditation. That's the method that Ajahn Brahm teaches. So like letting go of past thoughts about the past and the future, stopping the mental thinking too much, coming to the present moment, and so on. That's more like not specifically about kindfulness, but he does then come to talk about kindfulness of the breath. So he does bring in kindfulness into meditation, and he says that sometimes you have to have kindfulness towards the breath. Observe your breath with loving kindness. As you begin your practice, think something like, breath, the door of my heart is open to you no matter how you feel, no matter what you do. And that is really, it's saying that you can use kindfulness not just in metta meditation, like I explained that the metta meditation is like a special kind of meditation which focuses on kindness, metta, but I think this concept of kindfulness shows us that actually kindness is something we should do in all our meditation. It should always be there. So that's a really important thing to remember, that it's a part of all your meditation. Okay, so then next one is working with obstacles. The next chapter is Kindful, Loving and Letting Be. I've already gone through that. That was his chapter on metta meditation, which I did the comparison earlier. And then he's got a chapter on working with obstacles to kindfulness. And there are some great stories in this chapter. about the power of kindfulness and how it can overcome ill will, anger, and other mental states that are very difficult. But I've totally run out of time, and I did want to leave a few minutes for questions. I hope that at least this has given you a feeling for what these two books are about. And now I'd just like to see if anyone would like to ask any questions. You could tell a story of kindness from your life, if you like. Let's see if there are any online questions, maybe. To the YouTube viewers, there's a small group in today here in Perth because it's a public holiday. Thank you everybody for coming. It's really lovely to have you come along on a public holiday to listen to my talk. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Emmanuel. Thank you. Okay, we've got one question. Okay. Thank you. It's a question from Germany. Does Ayakama differ in her understanding and explanation from Ajahn's words, like the talks about jhanas? In German, her words have a different taste than in English. Okay, so, like I said, they're very, very different writing styles, different teaching style. In this talk, I was focusing on the topic of metta, and also kindfulness, I wasn't focusing on jhanas, but it does so happen that both Ajahn Brahm and Ayakama were very well known as teaching the system of jhanas in meditation, I don't really have enough knowledge to speak in detail about that, but I do know that they did differ in their teaching of the jhanas. I've heard that, and that's all I can really say. Ayakama had a little bit of a different understanding about jhanas than Ajahn Brahm, but I think I think the reason I put these two books together was partly because they kind of complemented each other because of the different styles. And I kind of felt that, you know, Ayakama is excellent at like teaching the concepts and explaining. And then Ajahn Brahm was excellent, really good at making it entertaining and interesting and using great stories to bring the topic alive. Like that, yeah. Okay. Last chance for questions. Yep. Okay. Yeah, I think like I kind of think that the traditional method, what I'm called the traditional method, is a very effective method. It's very systematic, and it's you can see the what it's trying to do, and I think you can see that the way it's taking a specific person. You start with a specific person that you know, and that means that you're kind of working on a person that you know. They say that you don't choose a person that's passed away. It has to be a living person. It's also supposed to be not a, your partner, because then, like I said before, they call it the near enemy of loving kindness is like passion. So if you choose a partner, then passion might come in and like make it more difficult and make it harder to get there. So I think traditional method is very, very good. And probably that's why it's a traditional method, you know, it's kind of tried and true. But at the same time, I believe that one of the great things about Buddhism is the way you can, you know, we're all a little bit different in our temperament, and we all have different minds because we all have different karma, and we all come from a different background and different causes and conditions. So that's why, you know, you can use different approaches. And so it's good to, you know, like know the traditional method. I think it's really important that you know the traditional method, but then be prepared to experiment and use other methods to see what works best for you. Okay, all right. So we'll call it a day. So I'm just about like maxed out my time here. Like, so sorry I haven't gone over time. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.